Right, so welcome everyone to the next session. We've only got an hour. We've a lot to talk about, a lot to discuss, so I don't want to say too much to start with. The focus is the railway in this country and getting the data out of the railways and into some format where we can all use it and as we travel around find out the prices, where the trains are, and also all sorts of other things. Are the toilets on the train? Are they working? All these sorts of questions. Anyway, we're going to start off with Peter, who's going to give a bit of the background as to how we've got into the situation we have got into today, where some of this data is getting opened up. Peter's one of the main forces behind opening a lot of that up. A geek who likes trains.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I was here 2 years ago, and there were hardly any people here. I was walking the room about 5 minutes ago, and my first words were, so, I also apologise, I only finished this last night, because I've been doing plenty of work with Network Rail, running around various places, seeing things. So, bit of history. TfL released an API to their TrackNet system, which is kind of a light debuggable system for tube trains, back in December 2010. And at the time, there was nothing similar for Network Rail, National Rail data. So you could know exactly when your trains were going to arrive.
Can you make it a bit louder?
Move it.
Is that okay?
Yeah, if you are struggling, there are seats all the way along the front, so I can only suggest moving forward.
We don't smell up here. Well, I don't. So at the time, there was no similar API to do to work with National Rail data. And this was a pretty big source of contention. Especially for me, I wanted to work with the National Rail data. I wanted just to play about with it, do things, see what I could do, make my own little apps, nothing big, nothing grand, but I couldn't. So, being a good geek, I said, well, what can I do? I thought, well, I could do nothing, but I can't. I can't see a problem and I can't sit there and say, I'm not going to do anything about it. I thought, well, I could try doing a political thing, but it's really not my strong point. There's no point getting me in front of people talking politics because it won't work. So I thought, okay, do the technical thing, which I did. So the first and most important thing I did, I read a book by Carl Malamud called 10 Rules for Radicals. If you've not read it, read it. It's great. It was a very eye-opening half hour once I read it. Second thing I did, I researched the problem thoroughly, found out where all this data comes from. Another really important thing I did, I talked to other people about it. I can't fix a problem on my own. A problem of this nature, lack of open data in the railway, you can only fix it by having lots of people working toward a common goal. And then I started working on a solution, got some timetable data, started crunching it, scratched my head a bit. And then 2 years ago, May 2011, I presented here at OpenTech with fewer people in the room. And what happened afterwards? Well, people started talking. I'd hit upon a subject which people cared about. It wasn't just somebody trying to do something. People actually wanted data to be open. Afterwards, I asked Network Rail if I could have real-time data from them. They said they had to make a policy decision, which I thought was corporate speak for no. So I expected no. I didn't expect a yes. And I remember the day I was sitting in a bank in Bishopsgate where I worked and had to pinch myself several times because I got an email from Network Rail saying, yes, you person who doesn't work in the industry has got no connection with it whatsoever, please have our real-time data. So I thought, right, okay, didn't really plan for that. What happened afterwards? I had to acquire an awful lot of technical knowledge very quickly. The way big organisations such as Network Rail send data around is nothing like what I'd ever experienced before. There was this technology called MQ, and I thought, right, well, that's something SysAdmin in the corner deals with. It's not something I know about. There were other problems. How do I translate the data into something I can work with? And lots of other things. Looking back at it now, I'm surprised anything's actually come out of that. But the most important thing that came out of it wasn't technical. My project and the data and the lack of open data in the road industry was discussed at the DfT's Transport Sector Transparency Board, which is a bit of a mouthful, but good place to be if you want to get things changed. And skipping all the middle bits, Network Rail were asked to open up their data to everyone, not just me, from 2012. I made the discovery that I got a tweet whilst I was on my way to work. Grins are measured in metres. I walked into the office with a massive grin on my face, and I'm not the only person. My colleague said, "Why are you grinning?" And I said, "Look at this tweet." So out of all of this came the Network Rail Data Feeds platform. It was built by a company called Rockshaw, who are now my employer. They like what I've done to get the data open, so they offered me a job, I suggest. DataFeeds platform was released in July 2012. It's got several hundred active users on it. I didn't think there would be more than probably a dozen. I think at the last count there were about 300. And it handles, quite impressively, several million messages per day. At peak, the railway generates about 17 train movement messages per second during the peak, and probably about 400 actual low-level train survival movements, which is a lot of data. Platform's available for anyone to use at datafeeds.networkrail.co.uk. Very importantly, there's a liberal license. It doesn't restrict you from doing much apart from branding it official. There's a self-service interface, so you could go home, or if you're lucky enough to have internet access here, sign up right now and get access by the time you get home. There's also a wiki, which I set up to document everything, because there's no official documentation for working with this data. That's at that URL, which wasn't my choice, it's a bit of a mouthful, but it's community-written documentation. It's everything I know about the data and everything I've been able to find out from talking to people at Network Rail. And finally, there's a group on Google Groups for help, discussion, talk about open data in the rail industry. That's probably got, I think, 60 or so people, and there are only a handful of messages per day, but they're actually messages from people who are working with the data rather than people who are just looking to talk to about something. DataFeeds platform, on it we have train schedules for the entire country for the next 12 weeks. That includes freight trains with a bit of obfuscation, so the reporting numbers and operating companies deliberately removed. We've got train movement messages, so every time a train passes what's called a reporting point, a message will come through saying train X has passed from here to here. Lower level, we have data from the train describer system, which is, some call it fairly primitive, I call it robust. It tells you exactly where a train is down to signal berth level. And I'm also working to get some of the metadata in there called S-class data opened up, which will tell you what aspect the signal is showing, what route is set from that signal, what track circuits occupied. Also, we've got detail on speed restrictions enforced on the network, published every Friday morning about 6 a.m. when it's officially published throughout the industry, and performance data from Network Rail's real-time public performance measure system, which again is an acronym that doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. So the important thing, what can you do with it? I have a project called Open Train Times, but this presentation isn't about Open Train Times, so I'm not going to go down the path of everything I did. First thing you could do, you can look at detailed train schedules, get the data, crunch it, put it in a database, see all the detail that you don't see on national rail inquiries, train reporting numbers, passing times, how long trains book to stop at every station. Another thing you can do, as I've done and spent many hours doing, you can build your own real-time signalling diagrams. This is actually rather popular. I was at Bletchley Signalbox early today, and the guy giving the tour said, "Oh yeah, we've got this little application on the phone." And I said, "I wrote that." And there was a slight pause, and I think he knew he was dealing with somebody who wasn't your stereotypical fan of trains. Other things you could do, this would be good for anyone who likes data visualization, real-time statistics. Network Rail, one of the metrics they have for judging whether trains are running on time and whether everything is good is the public performance measure, which is a measure of the number of trains that arrive within either 5 or 10 minutes of their scheduled time at their destination, depending on whether it's a long distance or a short distance service. I've extrapolated that a bit, and from the train movement data I've come up with what's called right time data, which is trains arriving within 60 seconds of their booked arrival time at the station. And also just on a simple pie chart of reasons for cancellations. Funnily enough, when it's snowing, the pie chart is full of not just weather-related things, but cancellations because train crew are unavailable. It is reasonably interesting to see that trains are cancelled for reasons other than just mechanical failure. We've also got temporary speed restriction data, which is on the platform just because it is. I don't know if many people are actually using it. It's fairly dry, but I've done something with it. There's another site out there called Raildar, built by a chap called Rob West. He's using the real-time data to visualise trains on a map. Hats off to him. I've tried. I can't do it yet. Still working on it. He's also got a load of statistics. If you like facts and figures, go on to raildar.co.uk. You'll be blown away. I don't know what he spent his Christmas doing, but he came up with this in a few weeks. I got an email and I went, wow. Another big site out there that's using real-time data is Real-Time Trains, written by a chap called Tom Cairns, who's a student at the University of Southampton. He's actually gone one stage further. He's concentrated on doing predictions. The data that comes out of Network Rail is facts. Nothing's predicted, and he's written a prediction engine which is more or less the same as the one you get from National Rail Inquiries. I couldn't do that, I don't know how he's managed to do that, but he's done it. Also, a really great thing he's done is a disruption heat map of the whole country that you can zoom in on. Last night, I think Wales was on fire. or something like that, or disruption Newport and Cardiff. You can zoom in on this map, and most of the time it shows London in a sort of fairly intense red or yellow colour because there are many trains into London that are delayed by a few minutes. That is great. I like it. Other things you can do with a platform that are being done with a platform, Placer and Jonathan Raper is presenting next. Take the real-time data and aggregate it in a multimodal data aggregation platform called Transport API. So if you don't want to spend time building your own system to read and analyze all the data, go on there, sign up, you get buses as well. It's great. So that's what people are doing. Next steps, getting more data open. We've got some data open, we don't have everything. National Rail Inquiries haven't opened up their platform. for various reasons. However, on the positive side of things, I'm now working part-time at Network Rail in their offices with access to everyone, seemingly, on identifying and getting more data opened up. The chap I'm working for said, "Welcome to the bottomless pit of information," which he sees as a frightening thing. I see as actually quite exciting. Every time I look on a shared folder on the network, oh look, there's another load of diagrams. Let me know your suggestions, please. My focus is on the operational railway. I don't know what people want to be opened. Network Rail do respond to FOI requests, but you can also shortcut the process and drop me an email, grab me afterwards, tell me what of their data you want opened up. I will try to put a case forward and get the data opened up. But unfortunately, not everything is possible. There's data within Network Rail they can't release for various reasons. The things I'm looking at the moment are the weekly operating notices, which are distilled down basically changes to the railway. Track and signalling diagrams, which lots of people have asked for. There's a system at Network Rail which has more diagrams than you can shake a stick at of everything. I got access to that about 2 weeks ago and sat down and spent half a day trying to wade through all the diagrams of track and signalling, everything. Geospatial data, map stuff, track centreline geometry, level crossings, bridges, that's something else I'm trying to get opened up. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have some data opened by August. Some of the data is licensed by the Ordnance Survey and isn't open, so we've got to go through a process of separating out the Network Rail data they have themselves and the data they have that is based on IRS data. Another important thing about Open Rail data is getting involved. There are lots of people working with Rail data already. I want more people to get involved and do things. The more people there are, the more data will get open, the more fun we can have, the more applications will get developed that actually help people and do the things that National Rail Inquiries aren't doing. On that note, National Rail Inquiries have a developer day on, I think it's Tuesday or Wednesday. If you're on LinkedIn, RSVP to the NRE developer group. And say you'd like to go there rather than just turning up, so they can get tea and coffee and a chair ready for you. I'm also hosting an Open Rail Data Workshop at the London Hackspace over at Hackney on the 1st of June. Details are on the Hackspace wiki. I think there's about 8 people at the moment turning up. I hope there's more than 8 people. And through Rockshaw, I'm also planning Data Feeds Anniversary Hack Day in July or August, somewhere in London. So, 17 minutes. I think we've got 3 more minutes more. Questions, anyone?
Could you give an example of the sort of data that they can't make available for anything other than like it's third-party OS data, say? What are the other things that might want?
The other things are where they have data about, for example, railway cuttings that isn't data that Network Rail gathered. It's Ordnance Survey data which they've overlaid onto their own data, but in such a way where you can't actually separate the data out. So it becomes kind of tainted by a restrictive license. So they can't just say, here's the data, because then the Ordnance Survey will not be very happy.
So none of this is for spurious national security reasons or anything?
Security is something that's come up. Network Rail have big issues with cable theft, so there is a security element to some of the data, but that's something we're discussing at the moment. Whether it's a real issue or not, I don't know yet. I've got to speak to a lot more people. Yes, some things may not be released for security reasons, but I think, personal view, those reasons will actually be very valid rather than just security theatre. Oh no, we can't do this because I'm hoping NR will become open by default in a few years' time. Fingers crossed. Yes?
Do
travel back.
Is the cable theft data open?
I don't know. However, I will suggest getting that opened up. You could look in newspapers, or you could look at National Rail inquiries and see where disruptions are. But I don't know. I'll put that forward. I expect they'll get the giggle when I ask them.
I think some of those numbers were actually in that BBC rail documentary the other month.
Yeah.
So they're out there.
Yeah. It's a case of whether they're actually numbers that Network Rail actually have to hand as in concrete numbers or just an estimation of the impact. Chuff, at the end next.
You said that the MyBit are quite liberal license. Has this changed since February? Because a friend of mine thought that the access to the Darwin data is a very restrictive license with some severe gagging clauses that you couldn't criticise the Association of Trade and Protein Companies without getting their access cut off.
This data is from Network Rail, which is different to National Rail, despite the fact that both of the abbreviations are NR. Jonathan is going to present in a few minutes on the National Rail Inquiries data, which is not liberally licensed. All of this stuff, you can use it for more or less whatever you want.
So I was just wondering whether you can get real-time data on numbers of people using trains.
Not yet. The reason you can't is because there's no telemetry link from trains where you can count the number of people on the train back to some central aggregation platform. Siemens Desira units, the class 350 and some class 450s can actually record that data, but that probably goes back into Siemens' own system or just doesn't get sent from the train. But yeah, that's one of the things that was on my list. But it's actually proven to be fairly difficult to open up. But yeah, it would be great if we could say this train is always more loaded than that one, or the front of this train is always full, go to the back.
Well, even, I mean, if real-time data isn't quite there yet, even kind of being able to get fuzzy data around numbers on particular trains at particular times would be really good.
Yeah, train operating companies do periodic counts on the trains. They send people out to count roughly the number of people on there. So that's more of a train operating company issue. But I will flag it up to Network Rail because there may be something they can do. Cool.
How do you see all these platforms changing as Network Rail are trying to become more intelligent about their asset management and their platforms updating for traffic management and things like that?
NR have a very good program underway called Orbis, which is offering rail better information systems. Which I think somebody said, oh, Orbis, we must make that stand for something. they're re-architecting a lot of systems. I see the data that made currently available still being available until they cut over to the new systems. And I don't see any end to this. I don't think they'll say, sorry, you can't update from the new system. I think we'll slowly get migrated over as the thing comes along. Or there'll be some form of backward compatibility. For example, the Cambrian lines, ETRMS still report through train describers, so you don't know the technology on the track side changed. You still get it in the same format you've always done. One more question, yes?
Did they disclose to you the reason that they brought you on? It's great that they brought you in, but why are they opening their data up?
Network Rail were told to by the Department for Transport. Network Rail also have a head of transparency, and they are firmly behind transparency. I'm here in my own time talking about this, because it's what I do, it's what I like to do. I'm not sponsored by anyone. I work for Rockshore, the company that built this platform. But Network Rail are firmly behind transparency, and they want to open things up and become more transparent rather than less transparent.
So on that note, should we give a... move swiftly on to Jonathan for another 20 minutes.
Good afternoon. I'm slightly more used to shouting because I was a lecturer for many years, so if you don't mind, and you can hear me, I will not use the microphone. And about an hour and a half ago, I was at home, just about to take these two boys to the park, when I noticed that the programme had been changed. We were not on at 5 o'clock, we were on now. So if two small boys start trashing the place, then that's the explanation. however, hopefully they might listen to me at least for a minute or two. Now, I'm here to do the other part of the unveiling about rail data from Peter. We did this as a double act. I did the political part, actually, and Peter did the technical part. I got invited to join the Department for Transport Transparency Board, and we did a lot of campaigning there, leveraging various announcements the Cabinet Office have made, the Prime Minister's letter on transparency, etc. We used all of that to put pressure on the Transparency Board to do the right thing and to broker a release of data to the open data community. And the way we did it, and in a sense this is still the dispensation that where we're at now, is we said, look, because this strange kind of grouping, the Association of Train Operating Company, has rights and data supply in existence for rail data, can we go upstream of that somewhere to a more raw source of data and release that freely, to leave in place all the existing arrangements and move upstream of it and then release that as a piece of open data. That's what we did. Yeah. It's never a good idea to show them angry birds. So we've arrived, we're in a strange place where a lot of things don't make sense. And that they don't make sense because we're dealing with a sort of unhappy compromise between the Association of Train Operating Companies, who don't really want any open data to be out there. It's disrupting their business model, and it's changing access to rail information. And on the other side, the government wants to release open data. And obviously, in the rail industry, which you all put in £4 billion a year, there's a very compelling reason why that data should be open and why we should be able to build applications and services that don't just show people all the good news, but actually show people what needs to be fixed about the railways. So, we've ended up with a situation like this, where we have a set of data available with more functionality, more types of data from National Rail Inquiries, but which has restrictive terms and conditions, and for which you have to pay. And you pay per app downloaded, £1.50 per app downloaded. Therefore, given you've probably got some cost yourself, there are no apps in the store with rail data coming from that source at less than £3. Some are £5. And that's the reason that there's a capitation fee to pay to National Rail Inquiries. And their argument is that as a commercial undertaking, they need to recover their costs. Other things that are in the restricted terms and conditions are that you may not bring the industry into disrepute. And as a... which, of course, it is doing itself every single day. By chaotic operations, by late running, by not holding connections, all of the things that have happened after rail privatisation, which had atomised the industry. And in a sense, what open data can do, what we can all do, is we can put the railway back together again by building the services that enable things to reconnect with each other, which they put us under, if I quote some book or other. So we now have restricted terms and conditions. Go and get that data if you want to pay for it. You will get slightly more information, and you will then get, if you want to go to the network rail feeds, they're very raw, they're very difficult to handle, they're volatile, they involve large volumes of data, a lot of cross-referencing in real time, so quite tricky database challenges, but you can get that data, and here are a few services running off that now and providing information. The first two are essentially web delivery. The third one, which my company does, is actually an API service, and you can get data from that. Some of the things that we're doing summarised here. You have to sign up and get a key. This is not the kind of data that we can make totally open. It's interesting that we publish a lot of open data across all transport modes, and within microseconds the data will be trolled if it's on a completely open feed. But we have liberal license terms in the sense that we don't take ownership of anything you create, and it, up to 1,000 hits are free, and we're quite happy to guarantee that in effect forever. So come and get access to Transport API if you want an API oriented access to those permissive data sets available from Network Rail. kind of things we can give you are all the timetables, individual trains. They've all got URLs. It's all a fully RESTful API. There's also Transport for London data, bus data, etc. Now, the reason I came to talk today is about the things that we don't currently have in this kind of unhappy compromise territory that we're in at the moment, where upstream network rail data is being released, but the more evolved, sophisticated, long-standing but proprietary and restrictive National Rail Inquiries data does have. Five things then. They've got in the wrong order. So I'll come back to that in a second. So what do we not have? We don't have short-term service changes. So when you get platform assignments, as in this case, you can see that the platform column is blank. For some reason, there are no platforms there. Sometimes platforms are changed for operating reasons at the last minute. That information does not go to Network Rail. Now, I didn't have time in the hour and a half between realising I should be here sooner and now to draw it. But essentially, if you imagine that all the train operating companies share information, sometimes via third-party service providers, which makes life even more complicated, they share information and they bring it into an aggregation service called Darwin at National Rail Inquiries. Now, we need to rewire all the data aggregation and sharing, because it shouldn't go first and preferentially to a private operator and then be disseminated under restricted terms and conditions. It should first of all go into an open platform, and then Darwin should take a feed off that open platform and do its thing. And obviously, in the longer term, what we're aspiring to do is to make that, to allow the industry to tell its side of the story and to put out its messages. But we, in the open data community, we want to put out the truth, the unalloyed truth about train services, and let people make up their own mind. And in a sense, eventually people will come to realise that it's you get through National Rail Inquiries, you get news management. We notice, for example, that all their trains, when they're shown on departure boards, are a minute less late than our feeds show them to be. So, there are all kinds of spin in the National Rail Inquiries service, as you would expect of a monopoly that's been unchallenged for 10 or 15 years. So this cancellation information, for example, a driver is taken ill and not available to drive the train, that information will be given to the train operating company. It will then hand that over to National Rail Inquiries. They will update the service to say it's cancelled, but Network Rail will not hear for a while, possibly 10 or 15 minutes, and we won't know, therefore, in the open data community, until the train should reach its first station and it's not there. So this is the first example of the data we think should be opened up so that we can compete and build services on exactly the same basis as National Rail Inquiries. This data is aggregated through a service called Tyrell, which is produced by a third-party provider, and that data is not released. So that's the first ask. The second ask is rolling stock information. This is quite important for various people for accessibility reasons or just in terms of choosing which train you want to travel by. If you look at the picture, this is a departure board from First Capital Connect. It tells you the number of coaches and it says first class at the middle and the rear. Now, we don't get that information. That is held in an industry database called Gemini. And that information, again, it's a third-party commercial provider, is aggregated into the Darwin platform inside National Rail Inquiries, but not given to the open data community. There are lots of reasons why we should have access to that information, but because Network Rail, although it has a copy of the data, doesn't own it, it comes from this third-party provider, they can't onwardly distribute. But we think that needs to be fixed, and that can be fixed in the same way that National Rail Inquiries now give out the timetables with a Creative Commons license. They can also give this data with a Creative Commons license and allow us to reuse it. We don't get live platform assignments. So you can't stand on a train with your open data powered product and see which platform a train is going to be routed into. And so if you start comparing, for example, Transport API on the left and the National Rail Inquiries on the right, you'll see different platforms are shown. And that's because one is the plan ahead of time, and the other one is the real-time kind of tactical view. We don't get that information. Now, it is possible to identify this kind of live platform assignment from that TD feed, which Peter mentioned. But that train describer feed requires reference information that tells you about where all the signals are. Look here. Here's a diagram from Peter's system. All the black boxes in this diagram are locations, sections of track that trains are allowed to occupy and which are controlled by signals. And that information, we have a sensor data stream telling us the movement of trains through those sections of track. But we don't have the labels. There's no asset database released with the labels telling you which section of track is where and what its reference number is. So actually, Network Rail, even at the right now, is pumping out a TD feed that actually no one can use because it contains data that nobody knows how to interpret. Except, of course, it's possible in one or two places. Peter has done it by viewing driver training videos in order to see the numbers on signals, in order to work out what signals they are, in order to figure out, therefore, what the sensor data is. But it's a massive, massive task, and even crowdsourcing it is going to take a decade to do. So clearly, we need Network Rail to properly release its asset database that tells us where these signals are, what the asset codes, which we can cross-reference against the TD feed, and then we can do real-time train movement maps like this one that Peter's done for a small area. We can do that across the whole country, at least in all the places where this service operates. Now, some places in the Highlands of Scotland, Cornwall, Lincolnshire, one or two places where that don't have these type of sensors installed. And finally, I think a database that seems to me absolutely straightforwardly should be made available. Station photos. There are photos of almost every bit of station infrastructure in the whole country which sit on the National Rail Inquiry's site. It's called Stations Made Easy, I think. And it has pictures of all the platforms. It even has a nice little picture of that shelter there. This is Long Preston Station in North Yorkshire. It has a picture of every stair, a comprehensive photo database. And this, of course, is all based upon a set of asset photos that have been, it's going to come back, hopefully, that have been collected, in many cases, in ways backed by public money. The public money has come in because you are funding the association. You're funding most of the train operating companies that run the stations by subsidising their socially necessary services, and you're also funding Network Rail through its because it's a company limited by a guarantee whose overwhelming funding comes from the public purse. Right, hopefully, this will come back at some point. Yes, that looks promising. So those are five types of data we don't have. And we don't have them because of the consequence of this compromise that's been reached. But the point of these compromises, making these rather dirty, ugly compromises, is that they allow us to create things that show the reason why the data should be more liberally opened up. And it's an ugly early strategy. We're in a sort of halfway house at the moment of an ugly early strategy, which is why it all looks so ugly. But we need to move from here through to the next stage, where there's a proper architecting of the data releases. Now, lots of things you can do once you have this data. You can do performance monitoring that is not allowed in the restricted terms and conditions of National Rail Inquiries. This is the tube. This is what I want to show you. This is our train lateness map. So the greener the colour, the more on time the trains are. So you can see the Thames Link line here passing through central London has gone very yellow on this particular day. And this is a basket of this is averaging the lateness of all of the trains. And we're also doing rate of change of lateness to see where the service is going off a cliff. You can see the overground line here is running extremely well, and that's pretty much a typical pattern of behaviour in central London. The Thames Link is screwed and the overground is running very nicely. But the size of the circle tells you how many trains pass through that station. So it's a nice visual indicator of how many services run through there. So that's our train lateness map. And that's the kind of thing that the open data feeds have now enabled us to build. We're also trying to cross it with social media, so we've now sucked out all the tweets that mention trains, all the geolocated tweets in the UK that mention trains or buses, and put them into a tweet map service. And we want to cross that with lateness in order to see, once lateness is occurring, what people are saying about it. Because often people will tell you that the staff have told you to leave the station or whatever, far, far before any official service has actually made its corporate mind up about what it's going to do. And sometimes, of course, that then we can even close the loop and put pressure back on the operating companies by atting them and saying, no, we don't want to do this. We don't want to leave the station. And passengers had sit-ins on trains, you know, when they've been unhappy about the way they're treated. So we're going to move into a world in which we can influence the operating of the railway, where the ludicrous things happen. I've been on a diverted train, which was planning to go 20 miles, pass through 10 or 15 stations on the way, and not stop until we were well outside London. Why should that be allowed to unfold if we're fully informed about it? Actually, the ATOC have recently, the Associated Train Operator Company, has recently agreed a code which says that they want their driver to be at least as well informed as the passengers, which I think is a sort of an indicator of that we're getting there. So the campaign goes on, essentially. We've broken down the door, we've got the raw data. There are a number of people, ourselves included, adding value to that, putting it out the door, enabling people to build services on it. Come and have a look at Transport API if you want to play with the data. But we do need a proper clearinghouse. We need to unplug Darwin, which actually has no right to exist. In the 1996 Rail Privatisation Act, they were given powers to run a telephone inquiry service, and they've just given themselves and organised themselves. They've given themselves rights and powers to aggregate all the data in the industry. But that's, I don't think, how it should be in the future. It should be more liberalised. And the industry itself should be on the same footing as the open data community. I'm looking to the Office of Rail Regulation to help us here. They have traditionally been rather easy on the industry, and we need them to become tougher. And we need all of you guys to get on their case, to write to them, to respond to their consultations, and to tell them that you want the data and that you've got propositions that you want to build on it, or you've got an interest in it, and you want to ensure that the rail industry shapes up. The other way of putting pressure on the industry is through the Department for Transport Transparency Board. The DfT Transparency Board has been a very, very effective way of bringing all the decision makers together, knocking their heads together, brokering compromises, and getting data released. You can send it requests. All of its minutes and papers are on the web. You can read some very, very interesting histories of pressure that we've put upon them to open up data. You can read the memos that civil servants have sent to the board saying, well, we don't really open up data, do we? And see the battles over data opening. But you can also see the data's come out. The data's been released, so it's been effective. And it's still a very important avenue for you to get the data out. So, five more things we want to get. Let's keep the pressure on and see if we can liberalise and open even more data. Thank you very much.
So, just time for two questions while it's set up. Question right at the back. No, you chair.
What's the latest
on
ticket price?
Yes.
Ticket price data.
Yeah, fare data was released a few months ago through data.atoc.org. But they neglected, and this may have been intentional, I can't sometimes read the mind, the corporate mind. They neglected to release the routing guide in digital form. It's available in paper form, it's 1,200 pages or something like that. somebody you know, may know better than me. It's therefore not been possible to guarantee that any fare that you look up is necessarily a permitted fare under certain circumstances. And so that's a thing that the Transparency Board is currently working on in order to try to get that opened up.
Why are rich trains so expensive? Is there any way to see the
Well, the accounts of the train operating companies are visible, and the Department for Transport also makes a lot of data about the subsidy available. This is a whole other talk as to how the rail industry is funded, but it's quite cumbersome. There's a specification of what the public sector wants, and then there's a negotiation with the private companies as to what they will pay. But of course, there has to be a commercial return to those companies before they're willing to provide train operating companies train operations. So, unlike in other European countries where they're directly purchased, in this country, there's extra money has to be spent in order to commission a private company that brings a return on investment. Having said that, of course, on the flip side, there's no debt on the public books because that's held by the train operating companies. So it's quite a complicated architecture how the rail industry is funded, but it's still costing between 3 and 4 billion a year from taxpayers. And if you want to break it down, go and look on the Office of Rail Regulation, Department for Transport.
Right. Final talk, Richard.
Now, I'm not sure I'm as good at projecting and lecturing as Jonathan, so I'm going to try and do an adjustment here. So it's actually working at the back. Can people hear me? Fantastic. So I'm going to follow up a talk. There's a really weird echo from the speaker at the front, so if I look like I'm in slightly in pain, it's because I've got half a second of lag in my ear. So I'm going to follow up two talks by two experts on train data. And I'm not going to talk about trains particularly. Instead, I'm going to talk about infrastructure and taking some of the things that they've spoken about and thinking about how they could apply to different classes of assets. So by infrastructure, I am talking trains. I'm also talking power stations and roads. And, you know, you could pick out to the... See, I've already lost one member of the audience. I always knew this was going to be a tough gig. But anyway, so the one thing they all have in common is that they are massively complex networks with complex interactions. So in the case of rail, then you've got an enormous audience. You've got a network going across the whole of the country. You've got different people who maintain the points and the track. There's someone who maintains the integrity of the system overall. There's different people who operate trains. So you've got an enormously complicated supply chain. And I did open this talk by saying I was going to talk about infrastructure and how it could be better using open data. So when I was talking about better, what did I mean? I meant, well, you get better utilisation. So people use it. You know, the worst thing in the world in terms of value for money is infrastructure that sits around that nobody uses. I'm not going to pick on Hull. I think the Hull Bridge is a wonderful thing. I do know it's a beautiful example of a bridge, actually. It goes between one place where there's not many people to another place where slightly more people want to go. So it was a great example of how to spend lots of money. But I would argue that by using opening up some of the data around load, capacity, where to use it, then actually people can start using the service slightly better. And that's largely what Jonathan's talk was about. And the other thing is this benefit on the supply chain side. Because if you have one version of the truth and everybody collaborates and shares information about it, then people can build smarter things. So that's kind of what I was talking about with better. Yeah? The open data enables everybody to add shared knowledge towards a community asset. And it enables a community to form around use of that data. Now that's something that was brought home by the first talk in the session, where you started off with someone on the outside saying, what I really want is I want information about trains. Then you're picked up by a company who wanted to build a platform to bring them in, how to start building that platform, and now finally being hired by the Network Rail to talk about how to release their data. And that's a great example of how you start getting a community forming around use of data. And once you've got that community dynamic going, then the community can start contributing data back. So this is a really nice example of an Internet of Things type product. This is a community, a cheat sensor put together by some people from MIT. They're on Kickstarter at the moment, trying to get enough money together to put towards this professional version. This is a sensor that you can put outside your house for about $100, so about 70 quid after shipping, which will then count every car that goes past your front door and every cyclist that goes either on the road or on the pavement. And that's a great tool for then in lobbying your local council to put in traffic restrictions or put in a proper cycle path, because actually there are 20 bikes a day going down that road, most of them at peak times when the road's quite small. So this enables you to really change some of the power dynamics, but frankly, I'm only going to spend 70 quid of my money or get together with my mates and spend 70 quid of our money if I know that the data can be contributed back and absorbed by the system. So you really need this two-way giving of information. And the other thing is around utilising of the service. Now, I was desperately trying to find a nice graphical example of people putting a new way of using a service on top of something that couldn't have been used by the previous two speakers. The only example I could think of this morning was Boris Bikes. So this is a great way of finding your nearest Boris bike, using the asset well, because you have a finite number of them, you need to know where you're going to do it. The next example that I want to use is around roads, trying to, again, generalise up beyond the railway network. The reason I have a nice picture of the motorways here is that all 80% of our motorways are maintained by one company. They're maintained by a company called Costain, and they're trying to work out how can we maintain these better. It is a large lump of concrete with some tarmac on top. They have a nice contract to maintain it. What can they do with using data to be smarter about the asset? Now, what they do actually is they drive LiDAR down the motorway. They do that about every 6 months. They pick up changes between them. They share that canonical information with their supply chain, so that whenever a bridge moves, they know about it. Whenever there is a bit of subsidence in the tarmac, they know about it. Whenever there are particularly bad potholes, they know about it. And they can share point-level data with their suppliers, which just drives waste out the system. And it also means that the suppliers can then contribute some of that stuff back. Now, all of this is lovely, but the bit that's kind of missing is around innovation. And what I wanted just to pick up was the fact that this kind of open approach to data, this forming of communities around the open data, enables people to provide new services. Not just services that are around using the asset better, but services that could be in completely different areas. So what I've put up here is just a screenshot from one of our startup companies, Locatable. And what they do is they try and use the publicly available transport information with the publicly available information around certain types of community asset and enable you to make a smarter house move. So if, like me, you want to be able to live within vague touching distance of London and Oxford and be in a place with a nice pub and have a supermarket in your village, then this is the only thing that brings all of that information together in a nice, easy-to-use thing. But that's bringing together open data there from four different types of service, four different types of asset, into providing one smooth service for the user. And that's the sort of innovation that the industry looked at individually can't provide, but can be done through open data. And the sort of core message from that is if you think what is the big challenge for an infrastructure asset, it's those things I had there. The open data reinforces the existing business models for infrastructure. So in the case of infrastructure, there is a really compelling case for there just to be an open data ecosystem around every single asset, because it enables collaboration, it opens up innovation, and it shares understanding across the supply chain, driving down costs. Now, that's me. I did promise I would be about 10 minutes.
10 minutes, that's excellent, yeah. Yeah, so... So I think we could take questions on any of the topics from this afternoon. If you wish to leave now, feel free to leave. There's a break for about half an hour for tea before the next session starts. Otherwise, questions. Any more questions? Yep.
So I kind of agree with that. That what open data enables you to do is have clear information bounds, what the capacity is at different places. Also enables you to build intermediate services that have an awful lot of AI that tell you whether or not it's a sensible decision to go to a terminus or whether it's to go to a branch station and then travel out. Does on the unfortunately mean it breaks one of what used to be one of my favourite games for tourists. You were showing them around London and you sort of wanted a break. You just say, well, I'll tell you what, I'll meet you at this station here and it'd be just over the road, but if you go by tube then it would take about an hour and a half. It's open data basically means you can start taking rational decisions and you can abstract some of that intelligence into an intermediate service, which is kind of what Jonathan said.
Any more questions? No, everyone wants a tea break. Okay, give a round of applause again to the two speakers.